Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting for the first time in 2023 is Sophia Wilson.
Hello, happy new year everyone.
Yeah, happy new year. I hope you all had a very restful break over the Christmas period. I hope you sat around in your PJs and your tracky bottoms doing very little. That was my ambition, but then the kids kept trying to make me do stuff.
I thought your ambition was to be in St. Bart's.
Yeah, it's true, actually. So I didn't get the invitation. I don't know, I must have gone into my junk mail or something. All those St. Bart's invitations, yeah, they didn't come through, sadly. Maybe 2023, we'll see.
Yeah, start the plug early now.
Yeah, that was a year-long campaign. Before we begin, of course, Sophia, you've obviously been keeping up with Harry and Meghan. And thoughts on Harry and the book?
I haven't read the book. I feel they've had enough media time that I don't want to give them the satisfaction of having any more.
Dear listener, one of my favourite things in the world is seeing the fury on Sophia's face every time the morning after Harry gives an interview to the press.
I don't know why I've taken it so personally, but I really have. I see it as a personal affront. Never met the man.
No. Well, he's not a yachtie, I don't think.
No.
Anyway, let's get on with the business of the podcast. Before we go any further, though, let's talk about the February issue of the magazine, which is out this week. I think that's right. The February issue of the US edition, meanwhile, will follow shortly. But let's... So the February issue of BI, Project X on the cover, the 88 meter from Golden Yachts. Brilliant story. Again, a bit like Victorious, which ran on the cover last year, started in Chile some time ago, Marco Yachts, and then, you know, worked its way through a few owners, ended up in Greece, and has been built into this, with Ken Freevok, this rather lovely 88-metre motor yacht. Wellness is a theme throughout the issue, so lots about how to take better care of yourself, particularly in our boat life section.
Yeah, as part of that is my write-up from my trip to Echelon Health, where I had all those invasive health tests in the name of Boat International. Invasive. So don't miss that.
Invasive's never good.
No. But anyway, all for Boat International, so don't miss that.
But presumably you got the full, you got the A-OK. You're in tip-top condition.
We discussed this.
You're pelotoning every morning at 6 a.m.
Yeah, 5:30 a.m., please.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, no, it all paid off. They told me I just needed more vitamin D. So there we go, more time in the sun.
Everyone needs more vitamin D. I take vitamin D actually every morning. It's kept, I swear to God, it's the reason why I haven't, everyone seems to have been struck down by a winter flu this year, but I've escaped it, touch wood.
I think that's a dangerous thing to say on January the 11th.
That's not as long as I keep taking my vitamin D.
Okay, I'll remind you of that when you're off sick,
So lots about wellness. A big feature on wellness spaces on board. Obviously, we went through the gym phase and now gyms are kind of converting into these multifunction wellness spaces as well. So we've got lots of some great designers commenting on what owners are asking for. Laura Pomponi is even designing a project. She tells us in the feature for one client who wants their guests to get on the boat and check in at this kind of spa-like reception and presumably get the old, you know, what treatments do you want, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, really infuse the guest experience with all that kind of the spa vibe.
Stuart, you're speaking about that like you frequent spas frequently.
I was in my recent Australia trip. Bell, our luxury editor, asked that I review a spa in Sydney, actually. So that was quite a nice afternoon, just spent sitting around the pool.
You kept that quiet. That didn't come up in our recap of your South Pacific trip.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. But no, that's a very rare occurrence. I'm not often in a spa. My wife and I went on a mini moon after we got married. We went to a spa. There was mud rooms and I didn't enjoy it at all. It was just not fun sitting around, yeah, getting covered in mud and steam. And yeah, well, not a fan. How about you?
Well, obviously back in my travel editor days, I frequented many a spa. But I have to say it's not something that I go for that much personally. Mainly, on a testing level, it's always quite fun though.
Yeah, quite. If you want to live forever, read this issue because it's got lots of tips on how to do that. The owner of Seahawk, Adam Alpert, gives Caroline a fascinating interview in the Owners Club section. So he talks about his journey into super yacht ownership and why he's using his super yacht to support some great causes wherever he and his wife take the yacht. They've done some amazing things. He's a fascinating character. And you spoke to Seahawk's captain at the Explore Yacht Summit, which we've spoken about before.
Yeah, I think this is the first time that the owner, though, has spoken publicly. And I think it is because he's just so passionate about what he's doing with the yacht. And he really hopes that it will encourage other owners to, you know, not necessarily do the same thing, but even just start to take on various projects when they're traveling around the world.
That's right. And he gives a nice narrative account. He got stuck in Bonaire during the pandemic and they kind of became one with the community. They had the local yoga teacher came on the boat and the crew did workouts on deck, and it's actually a rather lovely story. The owner of Asteria features in this issue as well, the classic Explorer yacht, tough as nails Explorer yacht. So he talks about his trip going up to the Arctic, and Georgia got the plum job for this issue, didn't she? So she went out to the Indian Ocean to check out Thanda Island.
I've always said Thanda, but actually I do wonder whether it's Thanda. We'll have to ask Georgia.
Yeah. That looks like a special place.
Yeah, she said it was pretty amazing. She obviously now does lots of these lovely trips, but I know that was one of her kind of, if not her standout trip from 2022.
Swimming with whale sharks and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it looked pretty amazing. So there's loads more in the issue, obviously, so grab your copy today. So the year has started with a bit of travel, although some more exotic than others. So I was up in Wrexham yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday. So Tuesday, I was in Wrexham. So I travelled up there with Leo from our commercial team. And he was desperate to stay the night, actually, to try and catch the Wrexham-Bromley game, which Wrexham ended up winning.
Yeah, for our international audience, you probably should explain where Wrexham is.
So Wrexham's in Wales. And Wrexham was, the football team was recently bought. Well, I mean, it's all over TikTok and Netflix. It was bought, or is it Netflix or Amazon? I don't know. But it was bought by Ryan Reynolds and another actor called Rob McKinney or something. I can't pronounce the surname, who's in a show I've never seen before. But everyone's heard of Ryan Reynolds. So they bought Wrexham, and we're talking to our cab driver who was taking us to, the reason we're in Wrexham was to go see Silver Lining, the amazing manufacturer of yacht furniture. And the cab driver taking us to see Silver Lining from Chester train station was telling us that Ryan and Rob were often seen drinking in the with the Wrexham faithful in the local pub after a game.
There you go. Could have been you. Selfies galore.
Could have been selfies galore. Ryan, buy a boat. Anyway, we had to come back to London, sadly, so we couldn't go watch the football. But Silver Lining, they really are the masters of bespoke furniture making for yachts. Their pieces are exquisite, and so exquisite actually I had to sign an NDA before they'd even let me in the workshop, because some of the pieces are, you know, obviously for very big and very secret projects, but they're gorgeous. And watching like the craftsmanship with various leathers and stones and wood, and the minute detail they go into to make sure everything is perfect, is really eye-opening. I saw they had a piece there from their new Sea and Shore collection, which they launched at the last Monaco Yacht Show. It was their first ever outdoor furniture collection, and it's rather lovely. But what's amazing about some of these businesses that serve the super yacht industry and supply the super yacht industry is sometimes you find them in kind of the corners of industrial estates and slightly more unfashionable corners of the country, and you kind of walk in and it's this, you know, treasure chest of amazing craft.
I think it's more amazing when you then see those pieces in their new setting on board, and then you think about where you last saw them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the satisfaction, I think, of seeing something you've worked on for hundreds and hundreds of hours installed on a yacht must be pretty good. But it does give me an opportunity, talking about silver lining and amazing furniture and craft, to talk about an exciting announcement we'll be making in Cortina in a couple of weeks, which is all to do with that and how we celebrate it. So we'll reveal more to people who come to the Superyacht Design Festival in Cortina in a few weeks, and obviously on the podcast afterwards as well.
Does this give us a good opportunity to give the Superyacht Design Festival a little plug? Less than a month to go now. What are you looking forward to, Stu?
Actually, before we get onto that, I was gonna say, well, from Wrexham to Belize, Sophia. Why on earth are you going to Belize?
I was hoping I was going to get away without this ribbing. I am going to Belize on Monday. Well, actually, don't get there till Tuesday. We are working with their tourist board this year, which I'm really excited about, hoping to kind of introduce it to the Superyacht community as a destination. We're planning to take a group of charter brokers and managers out there in the spring, but I am heading out next week with our events director to get a bit more of an understanding of what's on offer for Superyacht visitors out there and plan this itinerary for when we head out later in the year. It's just 3 nights on the ground, but I am very excited to see what it's all about. Despite my extensive travels, it'll actually be my kind of first time to this part of the world. And it's described as being a combination of some Central American jungles with Caribbean beach vibes. So what's not to like? I'm excited. Plus it's 30 degrees. So first tanning opportunity of the year.
So you won't need to be taking any vitamin D pills.
No, just going to get it all naturally in Belize.
I'm looking out my window at home now, and if you can hear, it's absolutely tearing down with rain at the moment. So I'm very, very jealous. The UK is existing under a rainy pool, grey skies at the minute. It's not much fun. But yeah, less than a month to go to the Superyacht Design Festival, which always fills me with dread and panic.
What a way to sell it. really fill our listeners with confidence there.
I've got so much to do.
Yeah, there is a lot of meetings, which is sort of Stuart.
Yeah, lots to do. But it will be brilliant. It's going to be great. Back up in Cortina, where it belongs.
I'm excited. Mountain air. I'm excited about the ski cup back again as well. I also have a real hankering for a cheese fondue, but then I'm not actually sure that Italians approve of cheese fondue. I've got it in my mind that this is going to happen because we're in the mountains, but actually, I think I'm in the wrong mountains.
I don't know. We work with enough Italians. We should just ask them if they do fondue. I've got no idea.
If not, that's what I'm on the hunt for. I have to just find one in London when I get back, otherwise.
Yeah.
But beyond cheese fondue, I'm actually really looking forward to one of the panels that I'm hosting out there, which is about the future of the GA and how space will be divided on board. It's kind of particularly looking kind of post-pandemic, because obviously there's been a shift and we know people are spending longer on board, more multi-generations on board, and how that might actually change the way that the space is allocated. I've got a great lineup. I've got San Lorenzo's Ferruccio Rossi, Ferretti's Stefano De Vivo, Nuvali Leonard's Valentina Zania, and Bonetti's Sebastiano Vida. So quite a range of spectrum, both from working on series, but also working on custom builds as well. I've had some obviously preliminary conversations with the panelists, and it's really interesting to hear some of the kind of common themes that they're seeing coming through. I think one of the main things is how underused that kind of traditional main salon and formal dining area is, and actually new ways that you can move that forward and use that space better, I guess, for the modern owner. Of course, office space has come up a lot, and in some cases sort of really even considering how the yacht can be fully used both for business and personal use, and therefore which areas you'd want guests to have access to and which areas you want to keep completely private. A lot about multifunctional spaces. So again, the idea that you have a space that's used for one or two or three different things, which I guess completely makes sense, because you're always going to be space limited on a yacht. No matter how big you go, there's always going to be a limit. And then I guess the final thing that's really come up is that sort of evolving role of a beach club. And actually, interestingly, going back to Laura Pomponi's point about the idea that actually now is becoming a sort of important entrance to the yacht. So maybe not a spa entrance, but a lot of the time if you're welcoming guests by tender, that's the first part of the yacht that they get on, and how that's actually impacting design and how you make that feel. Stuart, are there any yachts that you've seen recently that you think have really played around with that idea of how space is used on board?
Kensho, obviously. But I've wanged on about Kensho so much on the podcast, people are probably very, very bored of it. But it's a genuinely novel way of using space on board. The other one that's just popped into my brain, actually, is the 37-meter Bonetti Beyond. The way that's laid out is a bit different. They've packed a lot into its length, and on the kind of main deck, there's this kind of a younger generation space. And then you go up and there's, I think, the whole deck, there's a formal dining room and a lounge at the back, and that's a bit more kind of parents' generation. It's very multi-generationally focused, that boat, with some quite different spaces.
Yeah, she also has the master suite aft, right, as well.
Yeah, you're given so much option. You can, on the upper deck, bridge deck aft is the master suite, but you can have it on the main deck as well. There's lots of different layouts for that boat. But it's there was this really unusual room kind of on the main deck, and it's kind of like a kid's homework room almost, and a playroom that you don't see very often, certainly not on boats that size. So it was quite interesting to see what they'd done, and they've sold a ton of them. So it's clearly struck a chord with the market.
Yeah. Well, I do think that kids' space will become increasingly important. Yeah. You know, we're talking about owners getting younger, and inevitably they're going to be traveling with young children. And as parents, you know, you want a space to put them.
Sequester them.
Lock them up.
So closing the whole design festival will be none other than Tim Hayward. So he's the final act on the second day. So it'll be Tim and I on stage. He's a pleasure to interview. He's the ultimate raconteur. He's always very snazzily dressed to boot. So he'll be looking back on his incredible career. And we've given him the tricky task of picking six of his favourite projects and explain how they were conceived and how they influenced other boats in his back catalogue as well. So that'll be essential listening for anyone coming to the Secret Design Festival. Because, what a career. Some amazing boats under his belt. And he'll be revealing more and some of the backstories behind them, which is great. We did the same thing with Terry Tisdale a few years ago, and it was one of the best received sessions during the entire festival because, again, it's simply because of the quality and the calibre of the boats and the size of the boats he's worked on over such a long period. And Tim's very much the same. Speaking of Tim, actually, one of his most well-known boats actually just been listed for sale, Ice, the 90-metre Lursen. She's for sale with Black Orange Yachts asking 120 million euros. So it gives us a good opportunity to talk about some of the brokerage market and some recent big sales.
Yeah, there's been a couple that have been announced this kind of first couple of weeks in January. I expect they were probably actually closed in 2022 and it's just taking a little while for it to come through. I think the biggest of which, of course, is the 95-metre Palladium, which was sold by Merlewood with Northman Johnson acting for the seller. Since she's been sold, she's now been renamed AV, but she was on the market with an asking price of 140 million. So that's definitely a notable sale. Such a big sale, it will shift slightly the numbers of 2022, presuming that it did go through in 2022. Another big sale is that the turquoise motor yacht Quantum of Solace has been sold by Peter Thompson from Ahoy Club with FGY Yacht Group representing the buyer. She was on the market for 56.4 million euros. And she's just one of those yachts. I don't know, I've been on board a couple of times. She's been around quite a bit. She's been at yacht shows, so it's great to see her finally find a new owner. Another big sale that caught my eye was that Tankoa has announced the sale of its second 55-metre Sportiva 55, which is slated for delivery in 2024. And this is the second unit in this line sold in under a year. So they're obviously proving popular as well.
Yeah, interesting looking boat, the Sportiva 55. Good name for it, the Sportiva 55, because it's very low and lean. Good looking boat.
There you go. 2024, she'll hit the water.
So we should probably talk about the big brokerage bets of 2023. Obviously, everyone will remember that I quite comprehensively won in 2021 and 2022.
You're rubbing it in.
So my guesstimate for 2022 was 525 brokerage sales. I just checked actually the numbers now, edged up to 540. So I thought when we were recording the podcast in early December, I'd be bang on 525, but it's actually gone past 525. So 540. So I was a bit more bearish than the market ended up being. So 2023, Sophia.
Right. So I've tried to be a bit more mathematical, but I've just realized that I actually got a number wrong. So my maths is also out. So it's no longer mathematical. I was trying to make a prediction that I think the market is going to see a 20% sort of rebalance this year, because obviously 2021 was exceptional. 2022, though, was still, if you took 2021 out, 2022 would have still broken all brokerage records before that. So I do think there's going to be a kind of slight rebalance and correction. Now, off the original number that I had, that took my prediction to 404. And I now can't do my maths quick enough to work out that actually what 20% off 540 would be. So I'm just going to stick with 404. That's where I'm at.
404. Very specific. Okay. Well, I'm going to be more bullish than that. I'm going to go 460.
Okay.
I still think it'll be a very, very good year. Yeah, 460.
Okay, we need to get Caroline and Cecile's predictions in next week, mainly because I want less chance of losing.
I was thrilled, actually, to see the news the other day that Yakun had sold the 65-metre Nicolini. I think one of our podcasts last year, we looked at some of the best value big boats on the market, and this was near the top of the list. So Fraser repped the seller and Yacht One Enterprises, the buyer in that deal. She was asking 5.5 million euros for a 65-metre, 986 gross ton boat. She needed a bit of work, obviously, and the pics we've seen show a pretty dated interior, but still, she sold for around 5,500 euros per gross ton, so not bad at all. Very, very big boat for not a lot of money, relatively. So she's now been renamed Amadeus 5 and last pinged AIS just off Piraeus in Greece. So I'm guessing she's gone to get some work done. She was first listed back in May 2020 and spent 973 days on the market with three successive price drops in that time. She started at 9.9 million euros and ended up at 5.5. We don't know her final sale price, of course, but presumably a bit under 5.5. So I reckon that's good business. So congrats to her new owner. If you're listening, let us know your plans, what you're going to do with all of those 986 gross tons. It's a lot of space to play with.
Crucially, whether he's going to be in St. Bart's for New Year's Eve for you to be on board.
quite. But I'm obsessed with this cost per gross ton analysis on the brokerage market. And if you use that metric, there's a few other boats representing amazing value. Caveat, heavy caveat, they obviously need quite a lot of work, but let's, I just thought it'd be fun to look at a few. So according to, if you use cost per gross ton, the most affordable super yacht in the world, using that metric, is the 35 meter classing sailing yacht Aries, built by Camper Nicholson's and delivered in 1953. She's not in great nick according to our sources, but that's reflected in the price. She's asking $106,000. $106,000.
Wow.
And for a 35-meter yacht. So that cost per gross ton works out as $890. When she was in good nick, she's a great-looking boat. So I'm guessing would be a fantastic project for someone out there. A big motor yacht that's almost as affordable in cost per gross ton terms is the 61.54-meter Andaman Explorer, which was delivered back in 1963. She's asking $2.995 million, which represents a cost per gross ton of $2,604. Big boat, Andaman Explorer. Again, work needed. Two others I spotted, which both incidentally are for sale with IYC. The first one, Blue Dawn. Classic 62-meter motor yacht delivered in 1962. She's got a great look and is asking $2.8 million, so just over $3,000 a gross ton. She was built in Hamburg by a fascinating shipyard, Sietas Schiffswerft.
Beautifully pronounced.
Yeah, I checked that with our German colleagues. Sietas Schiffswerft, the company didn't make it through the pandemic, sadly. It filed for insolvency in July 2021, or rather the remnants of the original shipyard didn't make it through, as it was merged with a company called Pella Shipyard of St. Petersburg in 2014 to create Pella Sietas. And it was this company that folded in 2021. But anyway, it was, however, Sietas Schiffswerft, the oldest shipyard in Hamburg, having started building boats way back in 1635. Amazing. The other IYC boat is Simon Fraser, the 80-meter Explorer, which is at Bonetti's Livorno facility, or at least was when I was there last year and saw her out of the water on the hard, this vast bare steel hull, looking a bit sorry for itself, to be fair. But look, none of these boats aren't projects, let's face it. But for the right owner, it could be an amazing adventure. So we have Simon Fraser asking 4.9 million euros, according to Boat Pro. So that's 3,600 euros a gross ton. So let's say you make a cheeky offer at 4, you put in 20, and you got an 80-meter boat.
Where on earth are you getting these numbers from? Like a kind of dodgy London builder, just like, about 20. Just completely out of thin air.
80-meter boat for 24 million euros. Right. Lot of work, though. I've got no idea what she'd cost to rebuild. IYC actually have some nice renderings of what she could look like on their website. But I hope she finds a future, because really well-known boat, massive boat, and at the moment she's just kind of languishing there on the hard at Livorno. So take a look, interested buyers, and have a look at the IYC website as well, because they've got some good visuals of what she could be. No idea what it would cost, but back a fag packet calculation, 20 million. But anyway, that's enough dreaming and speculating. Let's talk about the headlines. What's first, Sophia?
So we'll start with some news which actually broke overnight last night, which is that the Dutch yard Ocean Co. has completed the rebuild of its 105-metre superyacht known as 1050H. Key changes to the yacht include a brand new superstructure, a totally new interior by Raymond Langton. She's also been brought up to new standards in technology, safety, capability, utility and sustainability. In a statement, Ocean Co. called the rebuild the first of its kind. A quote from the company said, "The yachting world has seen commercial vessels converted into super yachts and heritage yachts being returned to their original glory. But this is the first time a super yacht has been recreated to face the future as a wholly new contemporary vessel." The shipyard has said it hopes to inspire other owners to consider doing a similar thing, and the rebuild has allowed the owner to bypass a long wait for periods for delivery slots, and also reduce the overall construction time of the vessel by around a year, as the engineering and hull construction were already complete. According to our Boat Pro data, Ocean Co. currently has 4 other projects under construction, including the highly secretive 127-meter Ocean Co. 1Y721. Which has a new name, is now known as Koru.
I'm not sure.
Koru. But have you seen the pictures? They did an amazing kind of reveal with a light show and everything else last night.
Banging. Absolutely banging pictures by Guillaume Plisson. They look absolutely fantastic. Yeah, very dramatic. All over the socials this morning, I noticed as soon as I woke up, phone was lighting up with various photos of this amazing project coming out of nosing out of the shed at Ocean Co.
Be interesting. Do you think we'll see more owners take these kind of projects on?
Yes.
Following your topic of buying and doing up.
Yeah, because it's, the order book's incredibly strong. And so it's a quicker way, if you can find the shed space, that is, it's a quicker way into a yacht. So rather than the 5-year process, then, wait for a slot, et cetera, et cetera. You pick up a project, and it's should be more affordable, and you should get it quicker.
It was interesting when I spoke to Alboani at Monaco Yacht Show 2021. He was saying that, because he's obviously kind of built various yachts, and then he tends to sell them in a way before he actually enjoys them. But he was saying that is something that he would like to do personally as well, is take an older Ocean Co. yacht and then revamp it. So it's obviously a very personal project to him as well.
Yeah, he's got an eye for a deal, Mr. Alboani. Dr. Alboani, that's right. Sorry, the good doctor. Next up, we have the news that 110-meter Lursen superyacht Radiant has been spotted checking into the Blommenvoss shipyard in Hamburg for maintenance work. According to Boat Pro, the superyacht arrived in Hamburg in January after departing Greece in late December. And stopping off briefly in Gibraltar. Radiant features an exterior design penned by industry legend Mr. Haywood, while her interior is the work of Terry Tisdale, working in collaboration with Canadian design studio Yabu Puchelberg. Her interiors remain a closely guarded secret, with no images ever published. Other vessels currently docked in the same shipyard include another Tim Haywood project, Corinthia 7, as well as the elusive Project Icecap. Lursen acquired Blom & Voss, you'll remember, in 2016, and the shipyard remains focused on large-scale refit and maintenance work. Radiant had some maintenance work done by MB92 in February 2020 before this more recent service. It's not yet known how long she will spend at Blom & Voss or what work she's expected to undertake.
Next up, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, the 127-metre Oceanco Y721 has officially been named Kuru and is now transmitting under that name via her automatic identification system on Vessel Finder. We think the name is a Maori word meaning new beginnings, and it has previously been posted on Instagram by Jeff Bezos, who is thought to have commissioned the superyacht. The record-breaking sailing yacht is currently lying in dock in the port of Rotterdam awaiting sea trials. She first hit the water in August at Ocean Coast Shipyard and was then transported to Rotterdam, where her trio of masts were stepped. The project is the largest yacht to have been built in the Netherlands and the largest superyacht ever built by Ocean Co.
This will be all the yacht spotters will be desperately tracking this one. There'll be lots of photos, I'm guessing, to come shortly from our yacht spotter friends of her out on sea trials, and we'll bring as many of them to you as we possibly can. The last headline this week concerns Project Solarius, the new 118-metre Abeking and Rasmussen flagship, which has been spotted on transport from the yard's facilities. The yacht will continue outfitting works before being handed over to her owner later this year. Project Solarius supersedes previous Abeking flagship, the 98.4-metre Aviva, which was delivered by the shipyard in 2017. The yacht's design comes from French architect Joseph Durand, a shore-based designer whose yachting portfolio includes the first 26-metre OTAM 85 GTS Cara Montana. Highlights of Project Solarius include a large aft-deck swimming pool and an underwater Neptune lounge, which Abeking also installed on 74-metre Embrace, the new name for Elandes. But she's a great-looking boat, Project Solarius. Really elegant, I think, is the catchword for this project. She's beautiful. Very, very excited.
And really interesting having someone who is a relatively inexperienced yacht designer and working on such a large build.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. I think it's exciting when you see some unusual names coming in to design these very large projects, because they approach it very differently. And I think the outcomes, well, certainly in the case of Project Solarius, the outcome is stunning. It's really stunning. I think this is going to be one of the best looking boats on the water for me. Great proportions, super clean. Lovely, lovely boat. And I will be, you know, bending every arm I can to have a look on board. But let's get on to BoatPro, because that concerns German superyacht manufacturing. Data as ever this week, brought to you by BoatPro, our award-winning market intelligence service. And we've had a bit of news about BoatPro, haven't we, Sophia? So why don't you...
We have. So final little bit of housekeeping. It's just to remind listeners that shortly before Christmas, we launch BoatPro News. This is the sort of evolution of what was formerly known as Boat Business, but it now handily sits alongside our BoatPro offering. So you can find everything you need in one place. There is also a dedicated weekly BoatPro newsletter, which I can recommend signing up to for all your latest industry-focused news and interviews and analysis. But speaking of industry focus, it is soon going to be Boot Dusseldorf, or Dussy, as my team have taken to calling it. I'm not sure it's a Dussy thing, but Holly's hoping it's going to catch on. Just Dussy, apparently.
Just Dussy. Okay.
Which is finally back after COVID. So our data guru, Raphael, thought it would be a good opportunity to have a look at German production. In terms of the active fleet, there are 307 yachts, with an average LOA of 57.6 metres and an average GT of 1,648. So it's a relatively small fleet, about 2.5% of the global fleet, but a fleet of giant yachts. Germany is in fact the record country for very large yachts, with 59 yachts over 70 metres and 35 yachts over 100 metres. It's only had 7 yachts delivered since 2020, but the average of those is LOA of those is 95 metres.
Yeah, that's not a bad average. Obviously, Germany Well, Holland increasingly, but Germany have traditionally been the builders of these largest projects. Holland is creeping up the average size ranges too, but Germany is still number one out there in front. In the latest Global Order book, actually, she was a sixth in sixth place in terms of projects lined end to end. She has 20 projects in build in Germany with a total LOA of just under 2,000 meters and an average LOA of 97.3 meters. Lürssen, obviously, is the leader in Germany. Lürssen have delivered 74 yachts, so 24% of all German delivered super yachts. Last year, 160-meter Blue hit the water and was delivered to her owner, and they're getting ready to deliver 147-meter Opera. 2023 will be a very busy year for Germany. Lürssen has at least four other projects that are going to be launched. Norbertskruk has two projects scheduled for delivery this year, both designed by Winch. And Abeking, just as we mentioned before, has recently launched their very elegant flagship 118-meter project, Solirius. And just on the refit front really quickly, as we mentioned before, 97-meter Corinthia 7's up at Blommenvoss, as is 110-meter Radiant. Polaris, 115-meter, is currently at Kusch, and Abeking and Rasmussen has a couple of refit projects too, very large ones, including 82-meter Ilona. So lots of activity on the big boat refit front as well up in Germany. And that brings us to a close this week. So thank you, Sophia.
My pleasure, as always.
I hope you have a brilliant time in Belize. Quite keen to hear about Belize. It's always quite slightly fascinating me, Belize, as a country. I'm quite keen to hear your report from there. When did you get back?
So I'm away next Monday to next Saturday. So the following week, I'll be available to fully report all things Belize.
And obviously feedback to the podcast as well. We want to hear about Belize. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. This has been a production of Boat International Media. It was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen as ever. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.